acting general counsel, or wasted no time in undoing some of the decisions made by general counsel Rob. On February 1 and 2, he rescinded 10 general counsel memoranda and two important operations management memoranda that he determined were either inconsistent with board policy and precedent or were no longer necessary. There were, of course, a total of 12 significant documents that were rescinded. The notable rescissions are those among those included on the slide, including General Counsel Memorandum 18-04, which basically addressed the Boeing standard with respect to determining when employer work rules engage in unlawful restrictions on protected concerted activity. And Mr. Sheeter will address that in a few moments as well under the current case law. General Counsel 19-04 dealt with the issue of dues objectors. It actually had the, the intent or the effect of promoting the interest of dues objectors and was seen as an anti-union memorandum. That memorandum has been rescinded. And General Counsel 20-13 required the regents to urge the board to adopt the what was known as the more than ministerial aid standard to charges involving neutrality agreements. In effect, General Counsel 2013 essentially made it more difficult for employers and unions to enter into neutrality or agreements to make it easier to organize in various industries. And with that, I will turn to Mr. Sheeter.
Yeah, let me just say at the outset, it's always a pleasure to be on a panel with Rod Tanner. To return the compliment, I think Rod is well recognized throughout the country as one of the top union side labor lawyers, and I'm always impressed when I speak with him as to the breadth of his knowledge and the depth. Before we move on, one thing I did want to say before we go to the next slide is that I don't think you can, I think a lot of people don't realize the gravity of having a new general counsel, whether it be acting or permanent. The general counsel has a huge impact in this area. They're the ones that decide really what cases go to the board and prosecute those cases. And they're also the individual that runs the regions. So the fact that that President Biden made this early change is going to have some immediate impact, I think. Next slide, please. Okay, this is a very interesting case. Most of you have probably seen it in the papers. CNN was in a real dispute with the communications workers because it had employed some subcontractors to do a lot of their basic labor work on their in their publications and productions. The subcontractor was TBS. They terminated that contract and decided that they were going to go non-union and hire their own employees. They refused to recognize the union. They refused to bargain with them, even though there were clear indications they were a successor and a joint employer. So the first issue was, are they a joint employer? The board found yes. They also found that CNN was clearly motivated by anti-union animus. This case went to the D.C. Circuit that affirmed it. That case proceeded, and after literally decades of litigation, CNN entered into an agreement to pay a settlement to 300 employees in the amount of $76 million in back pay. This is huge. This is the hugest back pay award that's ever been awarded by the NLRB, and it exceeds the entire amount for last year, last calendar year. So it is an incredibly large number And it's so interesting that General Counsel Rob was the one that was involved in that and was quoted as saying that it vindicated the right of some employees that were clearly wrong. Next slide. The board also issued its final rule for joint employer status, which goes back to what I just talked about with CNN. The board overturned the 2015 decision, Browning-Ferris. Browning-Ferris was a very controversial decision because it held that two employers could be joint employers.